This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. A merger of two high-profile energy firms puts the focus on the future of coal.
We believe coal still has a very important role to play in a traditional way in meeting the world's energy needs, but it also has a very critical role to play in evolving the world's energy mix.
That story and more coming up this West Virginia Morning. Support for West Virginia Morning is proudly provided by Luke Frazier. In anticipation of Hurricane Milton making landfall in Florida on Wednesday, Governor Jim Justice activated about 40 members of the West Virginia National Guard. The support of West Virginia National Guard airmen and engineers was formally requested by Florida as it faces a second hurricane in 2 weeks. About 40 members of the state's National Guard are expected to spend approximately 12 days aiding in response and recovery efforts following the anticipated landfall of Hurricane Milton in the Tampa Bay region of Florida late this evening as a Category 4 storm. The storm comes not even 2 weeks after Hurricane Helene, which battered the southeastern United States, killing at least 225 people. About a dozen airmen from the 130th Airlift Wing, headquartered in Charleston, will deploy to assist with potential search and rescue operations. Approximately 30 engineers from the 821st Engineer Construction Company, headquartered in Somersville, along with the support equipment, will also deploy to assist with debris removal and management operations. At the state capitol Tuesday, the House stalled the passage of a bill related to the child care crisis in the state. Brianna Heaney has that story.
A bill that would allocate $5 million to child care has hit a major speed bump in the House. After being passed in the Senate, the House made a motion to prevent the bill from being passed that same day. The bill is vague. There is nothing in the text of the bill that directly relates to child care other than the fiscal note that allocates $5 million to the quote-unquote child care expansion pilot program. This, in part, is why Senator Mike Stewart, a Republican from Kanawha County, voted against the bill earlier in the Senate.
And that's where I become a bit critical in terms of bills that are given these grand titles that do nothing at the end of the day to improve the quality of life for kids and families who need child care.
Some legislators who voted to pass the bill said the governor's office told them that the money would go towards child care consulting. However, that information is not in the bill. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Brianna Heaney in Charleston.
The legislature sent a 2% cut in income tax rates to the governor's desk yesterday. Kaylin Bailey has more from the Capitol.
Governor Jim Justice amended his special session call, changing a 5% income tax cut to a 2% income tax cut. After the Senate debated and passed the 2% cut Monday, the bill arrived to more debate in the House. Delegate Mike Pushkin, a Democrat from Kanawha, introduced two amendments to the bill. One that would increase the tax cut back to 5%, and another that would require permanent foster care placement for all children in the state within 30 days after the 2% cut was passed. The House rejected both.
The average working class West Virginian maybe going to get like 40 cents a week. Not a whole lot for a 2% income tax cut.
Secretary of Revenue Larry Pack, part of the governor's office, told the House Finance Committee that the 2% cut would cost $44 million. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Keelan Bailey from Charleston.
The legislature ended the second special session at 9:30 last night. We'll have more coverage on what passed and what didn't on our website later today. West Virginia will receive federal help replacing lead water service lines. As Curtis Tate reports, one community in particular will benefit.
Lead pipes will be replaced statewide with nearly $25 million in funding from the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency. Notably, the city of Clarksburg's Water Board will begin a project next year to replace more than 4,000 lead service lines at no cost to residents. In 2021, thousands of Clarksburg's residents received water filters after tests showed elevated levels of lead in their drinking water. Lead lines are common throughout the state. Elevated levels of lead in water can cause developmental problems in children and even seizures. Under the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act of 2021, the Biden-Harris administration set a goal of replacing all lead service lines within 10 years. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Curtis Tate in Charleston.
There's a national poll worker shortage, as Jack Walker reports. It's hitting 18 counties in West Virginia particularly hard.
18 counties still need more poll workers, with less than a month until the November 5 general election. Poll worker retention has fallen in recent years due to the COVID-19 pandemic, low pay, and safety concerns due to political tensions. In West Virginia, it takes more than 8,000 paid poll workers to run an election statewide, according to the Secretary of State's office. Workers are typically paid between $100 and $300 for working on election day, though it varies by county. For a full list of counties in need of poll workers, visit our website at wvpublic.org. To register as a poll worker, visit govotewv.com. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Jack Walker in Shepherdstown.
Over the summer, natural gas generated nearly half the country's electricity. As Curtis Tate reports, it's been years since coal came close.
Hotter weather, lower natural gas prices, and new natural gas power plants combined to push gas toward the 50% mark in U.S. electricity generation. For many years, coal was in that dominant position. It last came close in 2008, but has steadily fallen since, according to the U.S. Energy Information Administration. Last year, coal slid to just 16% of U.S. electricity generation. States surrounding West Virginia reflect that shift from coal to gas. West Virginia is an outlier, relying on coal for 88% of its electricity, the most of any state. Appalachian Power, one of the state's largest utilities, said recently it was considering a conversion of two of its West Virginia power plants from coal to gas. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Curtis Tate in Charleston.
This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. It's 7:51. Becoming mostly sunny today, highs in the 60s and low 70s. Clear overnight, lows in the 30s and 40s. Tomorrow, sunny with highs in the 60s. Support for WVPB is provided by the West Virginia State Treasurer's Office with a Smart 529 program, recognizing West Virginia's teachers through the Above and Beyond Project. More at wvtreasury.com. In August, Pennsylvania-based Console Energy announced it would merge with St. Louis-based Arch Resources to form Core Natural Resources. The combined company won't just produce coal for generating electricity or making steel. Curtis Tate spoke with Dan Connell, Senior Vice President for Console Innovations, about what else coal can do.
Is coal used to make wind turbines and solar panels?
Looking at wind turbines as an example, one megawatt wind turbine requires more than 100 tons of coal to produce, just to make the steel and cement that are needed to build the turbine. And in the case of solar panels, coal provides the carbon reductant in the manufacturing process that's needed to take quartz ore, which is mined, and convert it into elemental silicon, which ultimately goes into manufacturing the solar panel. So, obviously we believe coal still has a very important role to play in a traditional way in meeting the world's energy needs, but it also has a very critical role to play in evolving the world's energy mix. And those are a couple of good examples of that.
What about batteries?
Obviously, batteries are expected to be a critical piece of kind of the energy transition and the energy expansion, as we like to call it, because let's face it, the world's energy needs are growing, and the world's needs for electricity in particular are growing as we move toward data centers and EVs and other forms of electrification. But today, you know, the U.S. is highly import dependent from battery supply chain standpoint. So coal is one of the abundant resources we have, and we're looking at how can we use that resource to meet some of the needs in the battery supply chain. So today, you know, coal is carbon, graphite, which is a major component of lithium ion batteries, is carbon. An example of something we're working on is, can we take a coal silicon oxycarbide composite material, domestically sourced, and develop that as an active anode material that could serve the same function as graphite in batteries, but have a very different supply chain profile, and hopefully afford some performance advantages as well.
What kind of performance advantages?
We're targeting an active anode material that has a higher specific capacity, long cycle life, promising fast charge performance compared to kind of materials that are being used today, which are largely graphite based.
Are you looking for new uses for coal, considering its decline in the power sector?
We have hundreds of millions of tons of waste coal available to us in the United States. Combining that with recycled plastic, and there's a huge opportunity to increase volumes of plastic being recycled, and use that to form composite building materials that can substitute for some conventional building products. So one of the first product prototypes that we've developed is decking, and we're on path to get some prototype decks out in public places here, hopefully by the end of this year. But we think that's kind of the tip of the iceberg. And again, it's about how do we take this abundant carbon resource that we are blessed to have and find new areas where it can create value in meeting a need of the future.
How is that different from the composite building materials already on the market?
We need massive quantities of these building materials in the future. We need to make sure that we're using the most sustainable feedstocks that we can to make them. So if you can start with recycled plastic and a waste stream that's currently one of the industry's larger environmental liabilities and repurpose that into something that meets this building product need, that's a great place to start. Beyond that, again, you know, we want to be cost effective and cost competitive, and we want to introduce technical advantages where we can. And sometimes with coal, they're counterintuitive. But when you look at coal versus something like wood, moisture uptake is one area where coal can provide some advantages. And ironically, even areas like flammability are target opportunities for us.
What about aerospace applications?
It's actually aerospace that's kind of the most commercially advanced of our initiatives. So today, we take coal, we use it to produce this carbon foam material, which is engineered to have certain properties that make it well suited for aerospace tooling. So it's a lightweight, highly machinable material. You can machine it to 5/1000ths of an inch tolerance to get some very precise contouring that's needed to make aerospace parts. And it also has what's called a low coefficient of thermal expansion. So that means when you heat it up, it doesn't tend to change size very much. And when you're curing an aerospace part that's made from carbon fiber composite, it's important to make sure that the tool that you're using to do that kind of matches the behavior of the part that you're trying to cure. And the seafoam material made from coal is kind of perfectly suited for that application when you're talking about carbon fiber composites. So today there is a market for using these carbon foam tools made from coal to make aerospace parts. And those parts have gone into a number of both commercial and military aircraft that you would know very well.
That was Dan Connell of Consol Energy speaking with Curtis Tate about other uses for coal. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from Shepherd University and Marshall University School of Journalism and Mass Communications. West Virginia Morning is produced with help from Bill Lynch, Brianna Heaney, Keelan Bailey, Chris Schultz, Curtis Tate, Emily Rice, Eric Douglas, Jack Walker, Liz McCormick, Maria Young, and Randy Yowie. Maria Young produced today's show. I'm your host, Teresa Wills. This is West Virginia Morning.